Mr. Ashley, reel 6.
How was discipline affected by the war?
Well, of course, it had to be relaxed.
In what ways?
Well, we had to stop the church services every morning. We used to have them once a week. And we stopped the boys' PT, too, on the ships, if I remember.
Yeah. Did the standard of discipline vary much between ship to ship?
Well, of course, it depended on the commander. In the Armjig, we had Commander Royds, who'd been to the Antarctic with Admiral Evans, you know, and he was a strict disciplinarian. And the Queen Elizabeth, it was Lawson, who was more or less relaxed as regards his discipline, you know.
What kind of things, then, could you get away with on the Elizabeth that wouldn't have been acceptable on the Iron Duke?
Well, I mean, you if you wanted to go, you could go along the mess deck from the bridge to your mess. And, two, I mean, you could go on the... If at night time, you could go on the bridge with a scarf around your neck, you know, keep the cold out. Whereas you couldn't in the Iron Duke.
And what about the submarines? How was it there?
Oh, well, there's the discipline. You see, the discipline was 100% there. Otherwise, once you're pulled up for this discipline, you're sent out the submarines. You could have 100% health certificate. You could have 100% disciplinary certificate. Otherwise, you're not allowed in the submarines. And once you do anything wrong, you're slung out right away. But you can't afford to carry a man in the submarine is going to cause trouble.
It sounds as if it was more strict aboard the subs.
Well, it's strict, but the fact was the people accepted it. They knew it had to be strict. They knew we couldn't run the boat without strict discipline.
Yeah.
I mean, the captain put his faith in all his crew. I didn't have to go around and say, well, you know, you're not doing so and so and so, because it was done. Otherwise, he wouldn't be in the submarine's crew, because they're all getting extra money for it.
Looking back on the whole of your naval service, do you think on the whole Navy discipline was fair?
Well, I think so now. Looking at it from my age, and I did it from a boy. As a boy, I didn't think it was fair, but now when I come to think of things and see things going on in the world today, I think it's very fair.
Can you think of any examples of things which at the time you regarded as being unfair?
Well, the only thing that I objected to was very strongly was this having to walk about all day long with no boots and shoes on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very unfair for people, especially in the middle of winter.
If you found that if a seaman had been treated in a way that he regarded unfairly, was there any effective system of him appealing against
it? Oh, he could appeal against it, but he wouldn't get anywhere, I don't suppose.
What was the system of appealing against it?
Well, he had to appeal through this chief petty officer, and then he would do it through the officer of the watch, and then you put in the commander's report, or the captain's report, whichever it be.
And was that usually an effective way of getting redress?
Well, that was the only way of getting redress. I mean, otherwise you had to accept what was coming.
Yeah, but do you think it was effective?
Well, I never found it, never heard of anyone getting away with it after appealing.
Appeals were usually turned down.
Oh.
Yeah. On the question of discipline generally, aboard ship, what was the attitude to the naval police by the lower deck?
Well, of course, you only had them in the big ships.
Yeah.
They were very... not very popular with the ship's crew.
What kind of people were they?
Well, they were normally ex-petty officers made into these... or ex-seamen, leading seamen, you know, they made into police force. Then you had the master at arms, which was normally a... ex-chief PO. And I'm afraid they were very... I mean, as a matter of fact, in the Iron Duke, we had one bloke tried to do our master-at-arms in one night.
Tell me about that. Why did he do it first?
Because this master-at-arms was always creating trouble, always looking for trouble.
What sort of things?
Well, any little thing, you know, which normally you wouldn't think anything about.
Like what?
Well, like, say, standing about on the... talking on the upper deck, you know, or lounging about. He'd come along and say, well, stand up straight and, you know... And it was a stoker, especially... He didn't like the stokers. It was a stoker that tried to stab him, actually.
What happened?
Well, he got into his cabin and... He just fought him off.
Yeah. Did the naval police have much power?
Oh, yeah, they had a lot of power. I mean, their word was law, and I mean... You couldn't argue about it. If they put you in the report, it's no good arguing with them that they were wrong.
Can you think of any examples of where...
Well, no, I never come into contact with them a lot myself. I mean, mm-hmm. I was...
We talked about Marines a bit already. Did the Marines have any kind of disciplinary responsibility?
No, not over the seamen. Mm-hmm. Only in being in charge of the bathrooms and the latrines, you know, the clean latrines and the bath. They could chuck you out of the bathroom if they wanted to clean the bathroom up. Or chuck you out of the lavatory, you know, if they wanted to clean the lavatories.
Mm. But, I see. What on the whole were relations like, and what on the whole were relations like between the seamen and their officers? What kind of relationships did you have with them?
Well, on the whole, they were very good. I mean, I've got on very well with the signal officers. We had some good one, Commander Woods. Mm-hmm. I got on very well with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of the seamen, I mean, they asked for trouble.
In what ways?
Well, I mean, they refuse to do these jobs and they... They're always moaning and groaning about something.
What jobs? When did they refuse to do jobs?
Well, when they if they got the middle watch or something, you'd find two or three perhaps wouldn't turn up and say, "Oh no."
What ship was this aboard?
Well, that was the Iron Duke. We had a round robin aboard the Iron Duke. I mean, we had a lot of trouble there with stokers.
Well, tell me about this in a bit more detail. What was the problem exactly?
Well, the problem was actually because we weren't allowed any shore leave. And these blokes wanted to go ashore and have a game of football and stretch their legs. And then they had this round robin, which started with the engineer, the stokers. And eventually we got leave on Black Island in Cromarty Firth over it. It was effective, but...
This was, in effect, a sort of minor mutiny.
Mm. Caused a lot of dissension in the ship after that, you know.
This was particularly amongst the stokers?
Mm, the stokers started all.
And how widespread was it?
Well, then the seamen joined in and everybody else seemed to join in. When the round robin was put around the ship, everybody signed it, you know.
Who were the ringleaders?
Well, round robin, you can't tell, can you? But I know who the ringleaders were. The ringleaders were the stokers.
What's a round robin exactly?
Well, it's you make a round list of everybody complaining, don't you? You've got no... All in a ring.
I see.
All signatures in a ring. In rings.
Were there any comebacks about this little mutiny?
Well, yeah, they got what they wanted. They got shore leave.
Yeah.
And then again, they started once again and for beer tickets. Then we got beer tickets.
Sorry, you're going over these things rather quickly. Go into them in a little detail. Now, tell me about this beer ticket thing.
Well, then they... After that, they said, well, while we go ashore, why can't we go and have a drink? Well, as you know, beer was short, so everybody was issued with two beer tickets when they went ashore. And you were allowed 2 pints of beer. I think it was from about 1 o'clock in the afternoon to about 6 or 7 at night. And you go to this big tent on Black Island and get your beer. Well, then they found out that people were going over there and everybody was selling their beer tickets for these beer drinkers, you know. They were buying them for all sorts of money.
Who were buying them?
Well, the people that didn't want the beer. The people that wanted the beer, and those people that didn't want the beer was making a habit of selling them. Yes. And making some money out of it.
Now, these events which enabled the Iron Duke lower deck people to get leave and to get beer tickets. It sounds almost like kind of trade union sort of activity.
Well, it was, yes, actually.
Can you think of any other occasions in your service experience where there was activity of this kind to redress grievances?
No, there was. After I left the ship, there was, but I don't know anything about that.
So this was the only occasion?
No, the only occasion when I was on the ship, yeah.
You've talked about the officers and your relations with them. What was the attitude towards ranker officers? Were they treated any differently?
No. Of course, there weren't many ranker officers in those days. The only ranker officers there were was warrant officers that came up. Because, I mean, from the lower deck started about 1917, didn't it? Because I was one of the first pulled out for it, and I didn't want it. Because I remember the skipper going up to see my mother and father about me not having it, not wanting to take on this course.
What about the NCOs? Were the petty officers, chief petty officers, how did you get on with them?
Well, some were all right and some weren't. I mean, they varied like every other. Some were very nice and some were just like to show off and show their authority.
Can you think of any particular POs or CPOs that behaved unreasonably?
No, well, you see, we didn't meet them at all because we didn't come on them. We came under the Yeoman of Signals.
Mm-hmm. I see. Fair enough. It strikes me that one of the problems for life in the lower deck, where everybody lived in very close proximity to each other, is that you really had to have a good deal of trust and reliance on the people you served with. Was that necessity ever abused in any way? I mean, was there any sort of pilfering or behaviour?
Oh, yes, you get that. They get the odds and but normally, you see, I mean, I joined the ship with three other blokes. Well, we kept together all the time we were on the ship until two of us left for the submarine service. And we were always together. I mean, we never made any more friends. I mean...
Can you think of any examples of behaviour in the lower deck which was regarded as not being acceptable?
No, I'm afraid I can't, because...
And if you found someone pilfering her, for example, how would you deal with him?
Well, you'd go and report to the master at arms and let him deal with it.
You'd never take action amongst yourselves?
No. Oh, no, I think that is one of the worst things that can happen in any service, is for two blokes to start an argument, because it brings everybody else in, doesn't it? Mm. Some take one side, some take the other.
In this question of sort of who had power and who ran things, who were the most powerful people in the lower deck?
Well, the master at arms. He was the chief disciplinarian. He was responsible for the discipline of the lower deck, because he had nothing to do with the officers, you see.
Yeah. Was the
sort of judge advocate for?
Was it always dependent on rank? Power was always related to rank.
Oh yes.
I wondered if the sort of long service people or anyone else who weren't necessarily senior in rank had a particular position.
No, because you in those days you saw a lot of seamen just with three badges and just good conduct badges, nothing else. I mean, you know, never worried about being a leading seaman or a petty officer seaman or a coxswain or anything like that, mm-hmm. or a gunner. Mm-hmm. He's just content with just being a seaman and doing all the dirty work. Leave him alone, he's quiet.
The next thing I wanted to talk to you about was various kinds of sort of traditions and customs in the Navy. And the thing I wanted to start off with was prayers and church service aboard ship. What was the form of morning prayers? What form did it take aboard ship? Well, what would happen?
Well, everybody went on the aft deck, and the chaplain came along and said morning prayers, and then you marched off to with the ringing band if you had one. Mm-hmm. But Sunday morning you had a service on the after deck.
And what form would that take?
Well, the same as an ordinary church service, your prayers and reading the scripture. Well, you know, I got that photograph from the Bishop of London doing a service. And, of course, if you were if you were Roman Catholic, you never had to attend. or if you're a Wesleyan or Congregational. If you're in harbour, you went ashore and went to your own respective chapels ashore. But if you're at sea, you weren't forced to go to the service unless you were Church of England.
For those people who were Church of England, what was the attitude to these sort of compulsory prayers?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I have found no fault. I thought they were a nice sort of deviation from the normal routine.
I see. What about the naval padres? What were the attitudes of the lower deck to them?
Well, they were very good. I've never come across a bad naval padre myself, and I know two or three now, and I've never come across a bad one.
Were they regarded as being sort of friends?
Oh, yes, they come and visit the mess and sit down, and you can always go and see them. If you've got any personal problems, that's the man to go to and get it done with. I mean, no good going to the master-at-arms.
Yeah.
You can go and see the padre at any time. Mm-hmm.
Mm. How regular a feature of naval life were regattas? Did they take place very frequently?
Well, before the war, but yes. During the war, there weren't any.
Well, we'll get to the end of this now. I'll just run it off.